Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Hello and good evening to everybody, and this is the May 26, 2019 episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cohort Truth on Sports and the head honcho for the Boxing Source on social media. You could catch us on Facebook at The Boxing Source. You can follow us on Instagram, The Boxing Source, and also on Twitter at Boxing Source 2. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, that is 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on the queue to be able to talk live on the show. We have about a 1 hour session here planned. For this particular episode, we're going to be covering a few of those major fights that happened on Saturday night. I was in attendance at the MGM National Harbor last night, so was able to catch that event there, which was headlined by Devin Haney going up against Antonio Moran. We had a couple of other fights with, the main event in Kissimmee with Jermell Herring and Masayuki Ito. And then we also had a fight between Austin Trout and Terrell Gaucher that we're going to go over a little bit as well. But I wanted to start off with the fight card that was at the MGM National Harbor that I was, able to attend. I was doing some photography there for most of the fights. Did, run into a few notable people out there, including Zab Judah, including Sakura Stevenson, which I was able to interview. You can catch that interview on YouTube where he was able to ask a few or answer a few questions, to, what's going on currently, as far as like his upcoming fights, possible opponents later on down the line, and when he's looking to fight for a world title. So be sure to catch that on the YouTube channel, The Boxing Source. We also, ran into Zab Judah, was there in attendance. He has a fight coming up in June. So we're going to be looking forward to that as well, possibly seeing if we could get him on the show before he has that fight on June 9th. So that's another thing. And I did run into the Gary Russell family. Russell Sr. was there in attendance with Russell Jr. And also Antoine Russell was there as well, so I was able to chat with them for a little bit and things like that. But getting into, the fight card over there, of course, you have the headline event with Devin Haney going up against Antonio Moran, who was originally supposed to be the co-featured bout on this card, with the planned main event being Oleksandr Usyk against Carlos Takam, but due to injuries, Usyk had to pull out of that particular card. That fight was scrapped, and this was pushed up to being the main event. Of course, you had Devin Haney there coming up as being the undefeated fighter. And, you know, at 20 years old, was coming in there with a record of 21-0. Had 13 knockouts going into the fight, going up against, you know, Antonio Moran, who had been there with a record of 24-3. You know, had pretty much a majority of his fights in Mexico before he was placed in a position to fight for a world title last year against Jose Pedraza, that he ended up losing by unanimous decision there. So he had been, you know, former world title challenger in the lightweight division. So, you know, this was something to kind of like see where Devin Haney was at this particular point of his career. I mean, he did have a couple of fights with, you know, Juan Carlos Burgos and Solisani Dangzini, pretty much kind of like difficult to pronounce there. But, you know, after that, going up against a guy that was a, you know, like I said, world title challenger, was kind of like a fairly good barometer to see where Devin Haney is at this point of his particular career before he is considered challenging for a lightweight title. Of course, you know, we have the news about the WBC and, you know, their decision in reference to what happened to that vacant lightweight title, which we had discussed here on this show a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, they're trying to see if they could, you know, have a pretty much a tournament of sorts to figure out who would be the mandatory contender for that WBC title after, you know, the world title fight happens between Luke Campbell and Pachenko. But getting back into, you know, what happened here with Haney, you know, pretty much the gauge of, you know, what he's able to do. He kind of like takes his time and assessing what Antonio Moran was going to do. I mean, Moran pretty much is a come forward fighter, but he's like something to where you kind of like would see what he would do before reacting to it. And with Devin Haney being, you know, the younger guy, much faster, able to go on the fly, he's pretty much is able to see many of the punches that Antonio Moran was throwing at him and being able to counter very well. He pretty much saw that in those first few rounds and that he was just taking his time and being patient, not really, you know, going all out against his opponent, even though, you know, really didn't think that seriously hurt Devin Haney there in those first few rounds. So look like, you know, Haney's plan was to get a few rounds in, see where he is as far as like being able to land well against his opponent and also defending well. There were times where, you know, we kind of like showcased a little bit of his defensive skills and out of range for a number of numerous punches. Also blocking a few punches as well. Said countering a couple of times here and there. But, you know, going into those, the Haney being a little bit more aggressive, he kind of like stepped up the action there in that particular point. And, you know, my thing was that I just felt that he was going to eventually stop Antonio Moran. He did have an instance where he was able to land a little bit on Moran's body and then have Moran down to the canvas, which inside the count from the referee, Moran thought it was a slip, but they said it was otherwise. So he pretty much got that eight count before being able to continue. He was able to, get through that round. And then it was, after that, you kind of like seeing Devin Haney becoming a little bit more aggressive, taking a little bit more chances, and then kind of like saw what his intent was within those, next couple of rounds. He seemed like he wanted to, finish the show in big fashion. You saw him, really trying to measure up with his right hand. Pull the jab a little bit and then throw the right hand with, intention. But, it seemed like he was trying to have Moran guessing as to where that right hand was going to be at. Now, he mixed things up by, landing or attempting to throw right hands up to the head and to the body to kind of like mix things up. And have Moran kind of like thinking a little bit more. And so, going into that seventh round, we had Haney with a clear advantage, but he just seemed like he wanted to, finish strong. And so, going towards the end of that seventh round, he did the thing where he kind of like paused with the jab and then comes in with the right. So we did it first, going down to the body, backing up Moran to the ropes. And then he did the thing with the left and then tried to come in with the right hand. And Moran kind of like thought that Haney was going to go down to the body with the right hand at first. But and then he tried to counter it. But instead, Devin Haney got that right up to the head, landed flush on Antonio Moran and just had him pretty much out, buckled, and he went down to the canvas pretty much like went down to the knees and quickly followed with, his head slouched down there on a neutral corner and your referee there did not even, finish a count of 10. He waved it off, seeing the status of Antonio Moran. He wasn't going to get up in that instance. And then Devin Haney, who was a knockout win, moves to 22-0. I had a couple of minor titles there that were on the line or pretty much being defended by Devin Haney, so he was able to retain those. He pretty much stays in that little lane as far as like contending for a lightweight world title. Pretty much that's what we got out of this is that, Devin Haney still is slowly moving up his way up in the ranks in the lightweight division. There were, sometimes within this particular fight, I would say early, where he was open a little bit to a couple of shots from Antonio Moran. Hopefully, in his next few months and next few months or so, I would say that he'll be able to work on that, proving a little bit better. So that he doesn't open himself up to those shots when he goes up against higher-ranked competition. Him being at this stage of his career, at this age, kind of like shows how fast he has been able to progress within his professional career and, seeing that, why he has been rated as high as he is within the lightweight division there. So, not only is he, ranked number four in the WBC, but he's also at that particular position in the WBA. And he does also have, a minor title with the WBO. And he is, kind of like they're ranked at number seven in the WBO. We know what the situation is there with the WBC. We'd have to see how they're going to be able to put all of that together with that kind of like semi tournament that they're trying to put together here in this case. My thing is that we got to see how they're going to be able to situate all of that, as we have Vasyl Lomachenko Campbell planned to be around the end of August. So maybe they'll kind of like sort out the thing with the contendership thing there within the next, I would say, 3 months or so. So that's the thing that we got to wait out to see if they're going to kind of like try to make those fights, or if there's something else in store for Devin Haney in the meantime. Like I said, this is a recent signing there with Matchroom Boxing to have his fights shown on the zone. So, we have to see if they're going to be able to put him into a position where he will be able to fight, soon. It's going to be pretty much an option as far as like where Devin Haney is going to end up fighting next, if they do, try to make that WBC tournament of sorts, or if he gets another fight lined up there in the lightweight division. That division also has the likes of Teofimo Lopez, Ryan Garcia, Richard Comey is also out there. Lee Shelby is also available. We did have the thing with that fight between Bartholomew and Easter Jr. A few weeks back, and we all saw how bad that fight ended up. So there's like a lot of options that Devin Haney could take, while he's building himself up to contend for a world title. But for the time being, we kind of like are reacting to the immediate results of him, Antonio Moran, the way that he did. So that's, kind of like what we got here so far from that particular fight. We may revisit it later in the show here, but he also had in the undercard, particularly in the main portion of the DAZN telecast, you had two heavyweight fights that were out there, as the one ended up having Filip Hrgović going up against Gregory Corbin. This is the same Greg Corbin that was part of the I think it was at Fox telecast or Fox Sports 1 telecast, where he fought Charles Martin, and he really didn't give much of an effort at all in that particular fight, and ended up getting disqualified. But here he was able to be in a position to fight Filip Hrgović, guy coming from Croatia, was undefeated at 7-0 going into this particular fight. He pretty much made quick work out of Greg Corbin, able to get the first round knockout, stay undefeated there, and kind of like put his name out there as someone to kind of like look at in the heavyweight division. They already have him ranked as high as number 9 in the WBA. You know, even with him just having those amount of fights, you know, being ranked within the top 10 in the WBA is kind of like saying something there for him in that particular point in his career. And he's, you know, also, you know, involved in the IBF rankings as well. So that's kind of like what we're seeing here with Hrgović, is that he's going to be someone to watch in the heavyweight division, going along the lines of many of these fighters that, you know, have been brought up or been notable that have, you know, what I would say like 15 fights or less in the heavyweight division. That's kind of like what we see out of him. You're probably going to bring him along slowly, though. I don't think he's going to be really contending in bigger fights until, you know, I would say a couple of years later down the line. But for the time being, he's able to, you know, get a couple of, you know, quick knockouts that are part of his overall resume. And with this win over Greg Corbin, that's, you know, something that could add to his overall profile there in the heavyweight division. You also had in this Michael Hunter involved, as he fought Fabio Maldonado, and that particular fight is something where he was able to, you know, get the TKO win there in the second round. Was, you know, something where he kind of like, I just didn't see why it kind of like went as long as it did there within that second round. You know, Maldonado really wasn't very responsive in that second round. He had been knocked down multiple times before. It was, given a count. But there were times where he just didn't, either he didn't, like, fully respond well while he was, you know, on his 2 feet, or a couple of times he was, like, turning his back towards his opponent after getting hit a few times. Kind of, like, seemed semi-responsive. But it ended up continuing until, you know, that last little knockdown. And then, you know, after that is when that fight was called to a stoppage. And, you know, Michael Hunter was able to get that win there to, you know, add to his record. I mean, this is a guy that had fought in the MGM National Harbor before, a couple of years ago. He fought Oleksandr Usyk and lost by unanimous decision to Usyk before, you know, Usyk went on ahead to become the winner of that World Boxing Super Series in the cruiserweight division and become the undisputed champion at cruiserweight. So you would have had Michael Hunter and Oleksandr Usyk being part of the same card here, but I just say with Usyk's injury, he had to pull out. Now, the other talk about Michael Hunter was that he was one of the guys that was possibly going to fill in as the opponent for Anthony Joshua after the positive test by Jarrell, which had him be suspended and not being in the fight there at Madison Square Garden. The Zone did interview Michael Hunter after this particular fight. When he said that, you know, he's ready to, you know, fight a lot of these contenders there in the heavyweight division. And one of the things that was interesting that he said was that he would like to get in the I did not really expect that name to be part of Michael Hunter's radar. I don't think that Dylan White would be interested in a fight of that magnitude, especially with him having this upcoming fight against Oscar Rivas. That fight against Michael Hunter would not be something that would kind of like progress Dylan White's career there. So, like, you would go up against Oscar Rivas and then follow up with fighting a guy that's ranked below Oscar Rivas, which that would, you know, move the needle for Dylan White getting towards what he wants to do, which is fight for a world championship. And, of course, we know which person he's looking or that he wants to fight for a world title. But it just remains to be seen if that's going to happen. It's probably more likely that he fights the other person that has, that is a world champion that has more than one belt. But either way, Michael Hunter does get the win. And like I said, has that single loss to Alexander Usyk. And that's pretty much it. Other fights that were part of the card, we had Daniil Yeliushinov going up against Luis Noam Buena, and he was able to get a unanimous decision victory there. This is the Olympian from Kazakhstan. And he was, you know, going in there pretty much, you know, I'd say undefeated. Actually, you know, this is his second fight within the past, what I'd say, about 10 weeks or so. He was part of that fight card in the Leocora Center in Philadelphia, which, you know, I attended. That was the one that was headlined by Tevin Farmer there going up against John O'Carroll. So this is like another fight for him to kind of like get more active within the, you know, welterweight, kind of like the welterweight, super welterweight division. But he's kind of like trying to be established in the welterweight division there. But, you know, he was able to, you know, get a unanimous decision win in this particular bout. So kind of like think that there's some expectations with Yeliushinov that he's supposed to be, you know, another guy from Kazakhstan, someone that's trying to be built up, kind of like another Kazakhstan fighter that many of us, or all of us, know, and Gennady Golovkin. But this guy is, you know, kind of like working his overall pedigree, being a good boxer, and then, you know, kind of like hone his skills a little bit better so that he'll be, you know, more successful in finishing off his fighters later on down the line. So, you know, we kind of like saw him get a fairly easy victory there. Was a unanimous decision, was a near blowout, or a near shutout, I mean, for his particular fight there. So that's the thing about it. So that's the thing about what we had in that particular matchup there with Yeliushinov getting the win over Luis Noam Buena by unanimous decision. But you also had, as part of the quote-unquote pre-show there with the Zone, was a unified super lightweight title fight. For the ladies, you had Jessica McCaskill coming from Chicago, Illinois, and her fight with Anahi Sanchez. That was for the WBA and WBC super lightweight titles there, and for many that attended this fight card early, they saw that this fight was basically the fight of the night. A lot of action between both fighters from round one to round 10. I think it was one of the better fights that I've seen this year. Pretty much point blank in that both ladies went at it from round one to round 10. And I thought it was a very, very close fight, especially like going into the better rounds. You did kind of see there were a couple of good moments there for Jessica McCaskill, but there were also a lot of occasions where McCaskill got caught with some great shots, particularly with the right hand of Sanchez. Then that looked like, you know, kind of like going into those middle rounds that Sanchez was boxing a little bit better, you know, pretty much in the middle of the ropes, not in the middle of the ropes, but in the middle of the ring, but also, you know, kind of like in, we had McCaskill kind of like follow her opponent going into the ropes, that Sanchez did a very good job fighting on the ropes, and that she was able to catch McCaskill a few times with some good shots while she had her back on the ropes, and then was able to get out of there without being in much trouble. For me, going into the tenth round, I thought it was too close to call in that, you know, with McCaskill, she did finish well in the ninth round to kind of like try to either like get back into the whatever it is, and then also finish well in the 10th round. And then it, you know, went to a decision, and the decision did go into the favor of McCaskill by unanimous decision. He had scores of 96-94, 98-92, and 99-91. And like I said, like right after that fight, I was like, there was no way that, you know, that fight was a 98-92 or a 99-91. That's not, you know, giving Sanchez enough credit on there. And the thing about it is that, you know, even McCaskill himself said that the fight was much closer than the scores indicated. Pretty much giving credit to Sanchez for giving her a very rough, very close fight, and that a rematch is possible in the near future there for Sanchez if she wants it against McCaskill. But you have to see like how that is going to basically work out in that particular division there at super lightweight. So, you know, McCaskill is able to get that win and move her record over to 7 wins and 2 losses. McCaskill is a, you know, fighter that did lose to Katie Taylor in the lightweight division, who was able to move up and win that WBC title in the super lightweight division, and then go up and fight Ana Hiss Sanchez for that WBA super lightweight title, and was able to add that on as well. So that's what you got from that particular fight there. So that kind of like sums up most of the action that did happen at the MGM National Harbor. It was a very pretty, it was a pretty good card. The turnout wasn't, of course, the turnout wouldn't be as expected with, you know, Usyk not being able to fight there, but you did have a few good number of fans out there to see Devin Haney's win over Antonio Moran. So that's kind of like something that probably will be built up later on down the line as far as like future cards there in the MGM National Harbor that are, you know, hosted by Matchroom Boxing. So not sure if once Usyk gets back from injury, if his fight will be rescheduled to be back there at the MGM National Harbor. But we know that Eddie Hearn is trying to get a fighter from the D.C. area to sign with Matchroom Boxing. And if that does happen, then you probably would see more of that fighter fighting in the MGM National Harbor instead of the kind of like frequency that he is fighting currently at this moment. But that's something that we'll have to wait and see to find out what's going to be going on in that instance. So that's the thing about that. I'm going to move on into one of the other notable events that did happen last night. This was over in Kissimmee, Florida, as you had the world title on the line there in Kissimmee, Florida, in the super featherweight division. Masayuki Ito going up against Jermell Herring. This was Masayuki Ito's second defense that he was going to have there for that title. Jermell Herring's first opportunity to fight for a world title. Of course, we had Jermell Herring here as a guest on the show last year. We were trying to see if we could have had him on last week, but he was in training for this particular matchup, so he was unable to call in for that. But going into this particular matchup, it was kind of like we're trying to see where particular point in his career. You had Ito, of course, you know, getting that world title opportunity last year. Chris Diaz by unanimous decision, then defended once against a Getty Supercard over in Japan. So he was able to, you know, have at least one title fight over in his home country in Japan there before going up against Jermell Herring. We all know about the backstory of Jermell Herring, Marine, and also the thing where he had that tragic loss of his child due to SIDS. So he was kind of like, you know, he was telling people about, you know, the adversity that he's already gone through in his life, you know, going up to this particular point. So it's almost like boxing is, you know, kind of like nothing to him as far as like pressure goes and you know, what type of challenges that are out there in the sport of boxing. So him going into this fight against Masayuki Ito, he had a lot of confidence that he was going to get the win, and you know, he basically boxed well against Masayuki Ito. Was the kind of like the fighter that was able to get him his punches off there first. So that's the thing about what we saw here for the majority of that fight, is that Herring was able to, you know, execute and land his shots much better than Masayuki Ito. In that, you know, while there were a couple of times that Ito did have a couple of moments there, it wasn't that it was anything that kind of like swayed this fight closer to his favor. So kind of like went through 12 rounds with Jermell Herring being able to outbox Masayuki Ito, and went to a decision where, you know, kind of like seeing it being a clear win for Jermell Herring, and he did get that unanimous decision win. Two judges giving him 10 rounds, one judge giving him 8 rounds, and he is now the WBO Super Featherweight Champion. And, you know, that is something that was a great moment for him when we announced him as the new WBO Super Featherweight World Champion. And that, you know, a lot of congratulatory messages were flowing out there for him immediately after the result came down. So you have Jamel Herring there being at the WBO Super Featherweight Champion, and he puts his name out there as one guy that would kind of like challenge, or seeing if he could challenge other guys there within that super featherweight division. You know, of course, he had the fight there with Miguel Burchelt being able to retain his WBC title. He did say that he wanted to get the particular fight. So that is one thing that we're going to be looking out for, to see if Mel Herring is going to go for another world title, either, you know, next or later on down the line. He does have that option where he could fight a voluntary or have a voluntary defense there. I don't see anything where the WBO had ordered a mandatory contender for that world title there. But, you know, for the time being, you have Jamel Herring as the world champion. So that's the thing that we kind of like see there with the WBO, kind of like looking at what's going on with the WBO rankings. You have Lamont Roach Jr. as the number one ranked contender right now. You also have guys like Jason Sosa, Scott Quigg, also part of those WBO rankings. So we've got to see what Jamel Herring's next move is going to be. He's probably going to figure all of that out after a couple of weeks, you know, from winning this world title. So that is going to be a wait-and-see approach for Jamel Herring in that instance, that, you know, he will kind of like see what his direction is going to be, you know, after winning the world title. That's what, you know, I kind of like got out of that particular fight. I mean, I seen that also, that Jose Pedraza kind of like built his way back up, getting a TKO victory over Enes Torres. This is, you know, of course, following his loss to Vasily Lomachenko last year, where he lost the WBO version of the lightweight title. Him getting the win over Enes Torres, getting that TKO victory, kind of like puts him, you know, back in the winner's column, seeing what he could do as far as, like, you know, what's next for him in the lightweight division. He kind of like is, you know, still floating around there as a contender in the lightweight division. But I'd like to see where he's going to end up fighting next there at lightweight, because if a few things don't follow through in one particular boxing organization, then we might see Jose Pedraza be put in the ring against Teofimo Lopez. I'm not saying that it will happen. I'm just saying it's a possibility, because otherwise I don't see a path for Jose Pedraza to fight for a world title unless he goes up against a higher-ranked contender in any of these sanctioning bodies or whatever it is. And that fight against Teofimo Lopez, to me, seems like the one that is the best possibility to happen out of all of the contenders that are there in that division that are ranked above Jose Pedraza at this particular juncture. So, you know, for me, I mean, that kind of like says that there might not be much more of a direction for Jose Pedraza to go. I mean, he's a, you know, fairly good fighter. Of course, he did get knocked out by Gervonta Tank Davis. And he did have that win over Antonio Moran, who, you know, like I said, did lose to Devin Haney. So that's kind of like, you know, what we have here in this particular juncture at the lightweight division for Jose Pedraza. Not very much as far as like a direction for him to go is as far as like what he's going to do there in the lightweight division, particularly when it comes to contending for a world championship. So, you know, that's what I got out of that co-feature bout between Pedraza and Enes Torres, is that, you know, Pedraza is able to get that win, but, you know, other than him being a former world champion, getting that win over Ray Beltran, there isn't, you know, much else as far as like him trying to get himself in position to fight for a world title, with Vasyl Lomachenko being currently the WBO and WBA champ and going after the WBC championship. And then you also have Rich Comey with the IBF title. And most people feel that Richard Comey is going to end up fighting Teofimo Lopez as that title defense sooner rather than later. So that's the thing I got out of that. As far as, you know, what else went down in boxing, you also had one fight in the 154-pound division. He had former world champion Austin Trout going up against Jarrell Garcia. Of course, Austin Trout has been a guest on the show multiple times. You know, he's tried to have himself put in a position to have a fight made, you know, over the past, you know, year or so, as his last fight wasn't. His last fight was back in June against Jermell Charlo, where he lost by majority decision. The thing is, you know, after that particular fight, they just didn't have anything in place for him in order to get himself in the ring and get himself, you know, worked up until fighting Jarrell Garcia, who, of course, did have his fight against Arislandi Lara as part of that same card that Austin Trout was in when he fought Jared Hurd. And that was like the Lara Garcia main event, where, of course, a lot of people talked about what happened before that main event went down instead of the actual main event itself. But after that, Garcia turned around, got a fight with Joey Hernandez that was, you know, much later on down the line. It was a quick one-round KO victory against Joey Hernandez. Then here, going up against Austin Trout. It was a fight that was, you know, semi-tough for both fighters. But Trout, specifically, there were multiple times where he did get caught with some good shots by Garcia. Times where he did get outlanded, and that he didn't seem as elusive as he usually is there against his opponents. Because that's the thing about Austin Trout, is that he's a very tough fighter to catch flush at times, and that he kind of like frustrates his opponents by, you know, being able to you know, ducking, blocking, you know, parry a lot of the shots that his opponent throws at him. But here in this particular case, he was getting caught a little bit more often than he usually does. And it kind of like showed as the fight wore down or wore on. And so, you know, my thing is that he was able to get through that fight, and the fight went to a decision and ended up being a majority draw. But a good number of people felt that Gauthier was the better person in that particular fight. And the way that us and Trout kind of like felt after the fight was that he was very disappointed in his performance, and that he kind of seemed like he kind of seemed dismissive. If anyone was able to catch his post-fight interview with the commentators that were there for FS1, he was kind of like saying that, you know, he had like a lot of rust, and he seemed like he was a lot slower than he usually is, and that he wants to get back in the ring, you know, sooner rather than later. And if he has, you know, like that same result or ends up, you know, being on the wrong side of a, you know, result and ends up losing his next fight, then he'll, you know, might be time for him to hang it up. I mean, he's been in the game for a long time. It's been about 14 years that he's been a professional fighter. And that if he's not able to, you know, get through guys like a Terrell Gauthier there in the 154-pound division, then there might not be, you know, much else left for him, you know, out there. He did also consider trying to move down the division, and that just, for me, it just doesn't, you know, seem right that he would move down the division, particularly with him being a part of the 164-pound division as many years as he has. So that's kind of like quickly what I got from that fight between Trout and Gauthier. I do have a caller in here from the 205 area code. What's going on? You're on the Boxing Source Radio Show.
What's going on, James? This is Mike Grady calling out of Atlanta. How y'all doing?
Doing good there, Brother Mike.
Okay, y'all talking about the Austin Trout Gauthier fight?
Yeah, he just kind of like went through that Trout Gauthier, and that, you know, Trout was getting, you know, caught a lot more often than he usually does in his fights, and that he seemed like a few steps slower in this particular matchup, and that, you know, him coming out with a majority draw was kind of like semi-generous, as a lot of people felt that Gauthier got the better of him in this particular fight. And, you know, it kind of like showed with Trout, and you know, going with what he was talking about going into this particular fight, and then seeing him after the fight was like two different people. It's like he was very confident going into the fight, but after the fight, you know, getting the result that he did and seeing that he kind of like felt himself that he did a lot worse than he expected, kind of like seems like he might, you know, have a very short future as far as like the sport is concerned, and that he wanted to get back into the ring sooner than later, because that way he'll be able to assess himself better. But he said if he has that same type of result, even after, you know, being in the ring, you know, a couple months after, because he wanted to see if he could get back in the ring in like by August or something like that. And if he has that same result, then he, you know, probably will reevaluate what he could do as far as like his boxing career is concerned.
Okay, yeah. So I didn't catch the fight, unfortunately, but I did see an article which talked about the majority draw, and then people were biased or leaning toward Gauthier in the win. And yeah, I think that definitely the frequency in which you fight would affect you in how you perform. And I don't remember when it was his last fight. I don't remember when that was. But I know he was talking about how his training and, you know, being able to peak at the right time, he wanted to try that and keep that going. I think it would probably be a bit too early to let that be decided in just the next fight, because, I mean, you definitely at least need a little time for him to get acclimated to his new trainers and then still to see if it really, really works. And, you know, that'll probably be one or two more fights before he can see if they are using that type of technology to tweak his training regimen. And then, again, just getting used to the new coaching styles. I mean,
right.
Maybe he sees something and he feels different in that, you know, like fighting the young guns ain't going to be favorable. But I would say, yeah, you're only as good as your last performance, but give it a little time and see if it actually working. But I guess only he really knows if it's time to put him up or not. But I would not let the feeling in the moment, like in the current moment, because it's probably pretty easy to get down on yourself if you had all this expectation and you felt pretty high and that you were going to, you know, perform a certain type of way. And then when it came the night of, you didn't perform how you wanted to. Like, that would be an emotional letdown for anyone, especially coming from, you know, like negatives, like coming from, you know, you would say that, like, yes, I guess he got a couple wins, maybe, I don't know who his last fight was, but just him fighting the top competition and losing, you know, in the last few fights, the emotional stress behind that is going to be there. So just to be patient and letting that dictate what he want to do, like, just take a step back from it and see what he really want to do and, you know, give himself more time under the circumstances that he's under.
Yeah. Well, the thing in reference to, you know, Trout specifically is, you know, he had that fight against Jermell Charlo and lost by majority decision there. And, you know, didn't really have a fight since. So, I mean, with that, he was trying to put himself in a position to get a fight done and get a fight made over the course of that year time, and, you know, was unsuccessful in doing that. And so, you know, like he was saying, they're trying to go through that new training program or new training regimen, trying to see what the results were, you know, out of that. And I guess, you know, he immediately felt that he didn't necessarily get the results that he kind of like thought he would get. And that's probably why he is looking, you know, at himself or assessing himself the way that he is right now, because he kind of like felt that he would get, you know, a much better outcome or a much better performance coming out of that training program than he did going up against Jermell Gaethje. I mean, maybe it's, you know, something in reference to what Gaethje was doing, but for a child himself, he kind of like seemed like he thought it would do better and kind of like make himself look better in this particular fight, because I guess he feels like, you know, he did a lot better in his previous fights or his previous two fights than he did here against Gaethje. Got another caller in here, 813, calling in. You're on the Boxing Source Radio Show.
Hey, what's up, guys? What's up, Mad Mike? Mad Mike Grady. What's up, Jay? This is Terrell calling from Tampa once again. Just jump in to catch up to see what's going on within the world of boxing. Decent weekend of fights this weekend. I will request back to you guys so I'm be off topic. But once again, glad to be here.
What's up, Terrell?
What's up, man?
So I would ask you a question, Jay. I get it that he wants the immediate results, but is that setting yourself up for mental success or mental failure by saying that something should happen immediately? Like, if this is you've only been doing this for 6 months or however long you've been doing it, is that like really setting yourself up for success or failure to expect and to want it to happen like right now, like as soon as you started? Like, what
well,
do you think that
like
is?
Well,
that's
kind of like putting a lot of mental pressure on yourself because, I mean, you, first of all, you made that decision to change up your regimen for being more successful in the ring, and that you wanted to, you know, do this or change this up so that you'll be able to have a better result. I mean, you know, we know that Trout has, you know, been in other boxing gyms before, had also, you know, trained in other facilities. But, you know, now he kind of like expected to, you know, get a better result after, you know, being in the Mayweather gym for, you know, a few times and then kind of like changed up his training regimen. So, he kind of like felt that after, you know, doing what he did in training, you know, making some modifications with his diet and things like that, that he would, you know, get a better result once he, you know, hit the ring. But I guess, you know, what happened was he, you know, ended up not having the amount of energy that he expected to against Cyril Gaethje. And that kind of like showed in the fight there. So, for him, I guess that's part of why he kind of like said after the fight that he wanted to, you know, get in the ring, you know, within the next couple of months, because that is when he probably have a better assessment of, you know, what he's doing there in training, if it's leading into good results or not. So I think that's something where he just kind of like had a little bit of mental pressure on himself, given what he was able to, when he was able to make the change and then seeing what he got from making that change, preparing for this fight against Cyril Gaethje. So that's,
yeah,
that's kind of like what it got out of it.
I wasn't able to see this fight, but just glad to hear about your quick analysis of the fight. But it sounds like Trout kind of faded towards the end of the fight. I know when I read real quick this last night that the fight ended in a draw. I was like, wow, you know. You know, everyone on the show was definitely rooting for Trout as we expressed when last on the show from that point. But, you know, what's funny about this, about technology now and just these new ways of training and getting weight management, power management, things like that. Sometimes you got to go back to just an old school method, just of training and old school method of dieting. But sometimes it's hard to ignore because now we know so much about the human body, physiology, dieting correctly, things like that. But you just your old school methods of not gaining too much weight outside the ring when you're not fighting, things like that, and just never getting just flat out of shape. Like kind of like Mike alluded to, we've seen time and time again from fighters in the past where they get in the ring, they're lethargic, and after a loss, they'll say, "Well, it wasn't my best night tonight. I wish this wasn't on." It's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to hear people say that. And I do believe it, right? But sometimes it's like when you think about it, you're training for that moment. You're training for that 10 rounds, that 12 round moment, that for that fight. Right, and some fight night, you're not. It doesn't make sense to say you're not yourself. I mean, I know we've seen that, but it's like this is what your team has been training for, mentally and physically and spiritually to a degree. You know, so it's just kind of funny to see that when guys state that I wasn't my best tonight, I wouldn't have my energy. Well, I don't know what happened. You know, but so now we know so much about physiology and the body. And what's putting our bodies, we're not putting our bodies. Like Big Baby Miller, for example. He knows what's putting out. And yes, I'm joking.
Yeah, because, the thing with Miller was that we saw what he was all about, you know, so that's basically on him. But, you know, in the case of Austin Trout, you know, we kind of like seeing that he, you know, made the decision to make those changes and, you know, wanted to get those immediate results and didn't quite get it. So that's kind of like why he's pretty much down, you know, down right now. And he'll have to see, you know, what he does after this particular fight. If he's able to get another opportunity to fight once again pretty soon, or if he has yet another one of those long layoffs that he has been, you know, kind of like disappointed in getting there. Also, seeing if, you know, with y'all on here, wanted to, you know, revisit a couple of things real quick. Did cover the fight over at the MGM National Harbor with Devin Haney getting that knockout win in the seventh round over Antonio Moran. And, of course, Jamel Herring winning that WBO Super Featherweight Championship against Masayuki Ito over in Kissimmee, Florida. So wanted to get y'all's thoughts on those fights and what do y'all think about, you know, the futures of the winners in this case. I'm going to start with Terrell first and then go to Mike.
Yeah, on the Devin Haney fight, I didn't see that one. I was able to see the Heron fight. Thank God I saw something last night. But with Haney, I just heard that, looked at a couple of highlights and stuff like that. But well, when you back yourself into a ring, into a corner, per se, and you don't have a high guard, and you stick your chin out, then you can expect to get knocked out like that kid did. You know, that kind of came in no surprise. Devin Haney, like the recent signing to the zone, I think that he needs to be going to fight someone on the top echelon this next fight. Because prior to this fight and prior to the decision made by, I think, the WBC for Loma to give an acceptance to fight Luke Campbell, things like that, Devin Haney's name was under consideration for that slot and that title by Mikey Garcia. But I think he definitely needs to fight someone probably top 10, right, to show that he can take that risk, to show to the world that he does belong at the top in regards to consideration for contention for a title, right? So he's done a great job of doing that self-promotion by himself, finally signed with his own. So hope they take him to a next level. But as far as it's up to him. And this guy, he's on paper and really in the ring, it looks like he has the skills. He got good size for the division, definitely more than ample enough good speed. But it's time for him to set him up to fight on that top echelon, and he needs to fight someone like a former champion, if there's one out there like that within that division, just to show that he means business. In regards to Jamel Herring, definitely enjoyed the fight. Enjoyed every minute of that fight. I think there was one judge scored at 116, 112. And I think there was two scores about 118, 110, I believe it was.
Yep.
I don't necessarily think it was that wide of a margin for those two judges. I would have been perfect score with three scores of 116, 112, but nevertheless, it don't matter. In the night, he won his title, which is a great moment to see. I don't know, it's kind of, well, I'm kind of almost at a loss for words, and what I mean by that is, like, there's a good performance. There's a good solid performance by Jamel here. And the thing about it, Ito did not come there to lay down. He came there to defend his title for the second time. So he came to win, too. So it wasn't no excuse from either camp side. Really, I think there's quite a few moments within the fight I wish that Herring would have imposed his will on Ito a little bit more to make it a more emphatic win, right?
Yeah.
But it was a pretty evenly matched bout. But definitely, Herring definitely deserved the win and got the win. And even in that regard, you know, how we talk about title defenses so many times, can you go in there and beat the champion and take the title? And when you kind of look at that statement and look at the fight last night, did Herring definitely go in there and beat the champion? You could say yes. It was emphatically, but yeah, he definitely outboxed the kid for the duration of the fight. I mean, Ito definitely had his moments with his couple good right hands here and there. But for the most, him definitely earned that victory. So big up to him for getting his first world title. So it's kind of funny. The kid just got his first world title, and they already talked about a unification match for his next bout with Burchill. Let the dude have a defense or something like that, you know? And it's like with Burchill getting in the ring like that with him and everything during the first post fight interview, it's kind of like mounting public pressure for that fight to happen. But once again, this is all about Jermell Herring. Great job. I can't wait to hear from him again here on the show. If he does get in the ring with Burchill, hey, that's what it is. I mean, you do have to defend your title. And even given the opportunity to unify, you can't really pass that up. Even though I would love to take the optional defense on that WBO title, but nevertheless, congratulations.
Yep. I mean, he was able to, you know, have a good performance and, you know, keep Ito from, you know, being more active there in the ring. And he outboxed him to a fairly clear decision victory to get that WBO world title. And I did have a lot of praise from some people. And also, you know, like you said, the whole thing about Burchill being a possible opponent there in the future kind of like says that, like, hey, I mean, can you at least give Jermell Herring some time to enjoy being the world champion first? So, I mean, he got to figure out, like, what they're going to end up doing with him, because it almost seemed like they wanted to direct what Herring was going to do before this fight even took place. So it's like, come on, man. I mean, let him, you know, enjoy the victory. You know, let him, you know, do what he could do here. And then, you know, outside of that, you know, we'll see, you know, what his next direction is going to be. But, you know, for the time being, he's enjoying his victory, being a world champion and all of that. Mike, what you got on it?
Unfortunately, I didn't watch the fight. I didn't watch it. So I'm just going to trust you guys, and hopefully I go back and watch it. But
so you missed a lot of action this weekend.
Yeah, I missed a lot, man. I was, you know, you know how you call yourself trying to hang out and stuff, man, and I just was like, dang, I don't get out too much and then try to go and be social and stuff and miss my damn boxing matches, man. You know, that's how I go. Try to be social and you miss your boxing matches.
Yeah, kind of get criticized a couple of times for being social and missing boxing matches by somebody. I'm not going to name any names, but that's kind of it's kind of like what I get sometimes. But yeah, the thing about it is, man, it's kind of, you know, the thing to try to balance, you know, having a social type of life and following the sport. And I juggle with that almost seems like at least once a month or every other week. But, you know, kind of like see how I could try to make it work. And, you know, for the time being, I think I'm doing a little bit okay in that instance or in that reference. But, you know, it's still a work in progress here until, you know, I get a little bit more successful at it. But, you know, kind of is something where I just have fun either way, whether, you know, I miss out on a few things or miss out on a few events or miss out on some boxing matches. But, you know, we'll still enjoy it nonetheless. Like in an overtime session of the show, just wanted to have like one thing here real quick. Of course, next Saturday you have the unified heavyweight title fight over in Madison Square Garden, Anthony Joshua against Andy Ruiz. You have like a lot of expectations going into this particular fight. I'm trying to see what, you know, the defending champion Anthony Joshua is going to do against Andy Ruiz, especially, you know, with him initially preparing to fight Jerome Miller, but of course that fight got scrapped due to Jerome Miller's decisions. So Ruiz gets a second opportunity to fight for a world title. He did fight Joseph Parker in a close fight that, you know, a few people thought that he won. So there is that. And also, you also have Katie Taylor going up against Delphine Persoon for the undisputed titles in that particular division there for Katie Taylor in the lightweight division. So we will have at least we'll have at least three undisputed champions in women's boxing. Of course, you have Clarissa Shields winning the undisputed championship when she did, and of course you have over there at the welterweight division there with a undisputed champion. As you know, we have that long reigning champion there, Cecilia Brekus, still out there that has all of those titles. So we'll have another opportunity to see an undisputed champion in women's boxing over at Madison Square Garden, with a lot of people expecting Katie Taylor to be that person to win those titles there in Madison Square Garden. So that's kind of like the major stuff that's happening over in Madison Square Garden. Of course, you have like a couple of other world titles that'll, you know, be on the line. Callum Smith is going to face Hassan and Dom for those super middleweight titles that he has. So that's kind of like what they have in store for Madison Square Garden. But a lot of people are looking forward to Anthony Joshua against Andy Ruiz Jr. and how both fighters are going to perform against each other. I mean, I have the expectation that Joshua will eventually stop Andy Ruiz through an accumulation of punches. But, I mean, who knows? We might get a better fight than people expect there out of Andy Ruiz. Want like a quick preview from each of y'all. Whoever is willing to go first, they can.
On which fight now?
The Joshua Ruiz fight.
So I honestly haven't followed very much of Andy Ruiz. I know that he fought Joseph Parker, and it was a good match, and Joseph Parker ended up winning like a split decision or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to defer to you guys to tell me how his style is, but if his style is one to take punches, then there's no way he's going to win this fight. Does he have good stamina? And, you know, like, how's his style? Like, I would, like, literally need to go and, like, watch, you know, a couple of his fights to honestly judge the fight. But I'm sure they did match Joshua with somebody who could beat him, you know, not with the Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury fights looming, you know. But, yeah, I don't know Ruiz that well.
Well, the thing with Ruiz is that, you know, a lot of people are talk about him having active hands. They explain Andy Ruiz like how you have Adam Kownacki out there. Kownacki is, you know, similar in stature to Andy Ruiz Jr., but someone that, like, people say he comes to fight. So that's what, you know, people kind of like get from Andy Ruiz, is that he comes there to fight. He's very active with his hands and things like that. But it's all about what he's going to do once something comes back at him. You know, if he has a type of reaction where he's like, okay, I could get used to this and then still come forward, then you're going to have a, you know, fairly tough or, you know, fairly difficult fight for Anthony Joshua. But if he, you know, ends up getting caught with a counterpunch and is really stunned by that counterpunch, then he'll have a lot of trouble, you know, over the course of the fight if he has that type of difficulty. So it's pretty much all on him as far as like what he's going to be able to do when something comes back at him. I'm not really concerned about his offense. It's more about what he could do with his defense. Terrell, what you got on it?
Yeah, kind of the same. Like, I'm not totally familiar with the body of Eddie Ruiz's work, but I'm actually glad that you say that. Because as you guys were talking, I was thinking, I said, you know what, this guy's very similar to Kawanaki. Like I said, just in terms of stature, physique, body style, things like that. Because, you know, just because you don't look like an athlete doesn't mean you're not an athlete. And that's really the best way to describe Ruiz. Oh, and I keep that same. Don't look like you're a prototypical athlete, but never let them get the job done and has had success within the ring in the sport of boxing. I saw a recent clip on Ruiz on Twitter just showcasing his hand speed, things like that, and movement, lateral movement. And, I mean, granted, I know it's just a clip. I get that, you know. But he looked great in the clip. He looked at good speed, good tight defense, things like that. But what I like to think, like you stated, when you think about going against Joshua, who has a stunning jab, who has a great uppercut, things like that, the fight doesn't start until you hit. So that way you'll be able to adjust your reaction from people and getting hit by a true heavyweight and nevertheless the heavyweight champion on top of that. So it looks good. I'm glad they got a decent replacement. It's flame out. You know, it's mandatory. But mm-hmm. the fight we won't know Ruiz has until it's back by John. We'll take that. Will it over your hold and yeah, things like that. I don't think that's what happened. I mean, because it's anybody, you don't, these days, you don't get a chance very often to fight for the title and within the heavyweight division. Being because the fight, the titles are locked down by two guys, right? So if someone gets thrown a chance, you need to go in there and give it your all and just give it all up and leave it all in the ring, which is why I'm just going back with Luis Ortiz. It is very disappointing that they didn't do what they had to do to get him signed, to get him in the ring, to get that chance. I mean, this guy's been waiting for years, right? You know, mm-hmm. to get back and get a title. We know he lost against Wilder a year and a half ago, whatever it was. And then at one point, he's still waiting in line, and you had a chance. It's right there. If you got to take the short end, take the short end. But even in that regard, he would have gotten a career-high payday and never said he'd get in there. Because even someone like a Dillian White, he would love to get in there. But we know what happened with those negotiations as well. Enter Eddie Hearn. I mean, I hope it'll be a good fight as long as it may last. And like I say, you never know. He could strike lightning and touch Anthony Joshua on the shin and touch him and get him out of there. You never know. But for the most, he's come in as an underdog, and most people and insiders expect for Joshua to emerge victorious, more likely be a KO. So at least we have a fight within heavy division. Wilder got his win a couple weeks ago, last week, whatever it was. Joshua got his win. And even Sovnet, safe and projecting that Joshua does win, there's been some just kind of word out there that these guys are going to meet after this fight and pretty much demand that they fight next as far as Wilder and Joshua. And once again, at this point, even I hear that, I don't believe anything until I see it. Because there's been so much bullcrap going back and forth between these two camps. It's just ridiculous. So, there you have it.
I mean, yeah, there's a little lot there to kind of like grasp. But, I mean, you did kind of like bring up that point about, you know, what, you know, basically what happened after this particular fight if, you know, Joshua gets the win. I mean, Ruiz could, you know, change things up and, you know, like you said, if he catches Joshua with a big punch, it might, you know, change the course of the heavyweight division. But if he's not able to do that and Joshua gets the win, then it just seems like it's more of a waiting game between the camps of Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder. And it's just going to be, you know, a case of, okay, are they going to finally, you know, meet together and try to discuss getting the fight put together? Because now is more of a time where people are getting more and more impatient with this fight taking place. They don't want it to, you know, get to the levels of a Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, to where they had to, you know, wait up to 5 years or so before that fight took place. They got to do something where they're going to, you know, set aside a few differences on each side and then make the fight happen so that, you know, the fans get to see who would be the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world and things like that. So, like I said, I'm looking forward to what's going to happen on Saturday. And then after that, we'll see what the results are going to be as far as, you know, the winner of this particular fight. And then if it's Joshua, then how close are we going to be to having an undisputed heavyweight title fight? You know, with that, kind of like covering this particular episode. So wanted to bring things to a close. Kind of thank Mike and Terrell for calling in here for this particular episode. We're going to have the next podcast on June 2nd. So I look forward to that. And I have the sister shows on the Go Long Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. You have Take This L. You have Cold Hard Truth on Sports. But once again, we'll be here next week, same time. And like I say at the end of every show, Point of Boxing is hit, and I can hit. Not the send and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.
All right.